Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football, drink beer, talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? We've got another great show today. An NFL Pro Bowler gets traded. The NFL schedule is out. We'll tell you the winners and losers, plus our favorite matchups in 2023. Then we'll continue our NFL draft grades with the NFC East. But joining me to do so, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what's going on?
Hey, Brad, another week. I'm so happy that the schedule's out. It just means we're getting a couple of more months, unfortunately, closer. But I can't wait. Can't wait to break down these schedules. I've been combing over everything, looking at everything, putting everything together. I can't wait to talk about it.
Man, I am with you. And here's the thing, to kind of peel back the curtain for you guys. We typically record on Tuesday evenings with a little bit of editing on Wednesday evening. And then the episode, most of you guys probably know, drops late Wednesday night, West Coast time, super early AM, Thursday morning, East Coast time. That way it's just ready to go, locked and loaded in your guys' podcast players for Thursday morning on your way to work or whatever you're doing. We want to have it ready for you guys. But because of the schedule with the way we record and drop the episodes, the timing was kind of unfortunate last week with the schedule dropping on Thursday, the day we dropped the episode. So obviously the episode was already recorded before the schedule release had hit. Didn't give us a chance to comment and really talk about it, but it does give us a lot of fun things to talk about today, talking about some winners and losers with the schedule, some of our favorite games, some of our favorite primetime matchups. Going to be a lot of fun to jump into all that. But like always, I want to jump into some NFL news before we get to that. And then, of course, some more NFL draft grades. So big show today. I want to start with Za'Darius Smith. Alex, the Minnesota Vikings have traded three-time Pro Bowl pass rusher Za'Darius Smith to the Cleveland Browns. Along with Smith, the Browns received a 2025 sixth and seventh round pick. The Vikings received a 2024 and 2025 fifth round picks. He was previously signed through the 2024 season with the Vikings with a $9.4 million base salary and with $5 million guaranteed. Now Smith is going to receive $11.75 million this year as part of his new contract.
Again, I always encourage our listeners to keep track of everything that we're saying. Last week, we specifically talked about this. We talked about three. We focused on Dalvin Cook, but there were two other players that I mentioned. I mentioned Za'Darius Smith, and I also mentioned Danielle Hunter. Smith was the first one to fall. Now let's watch and see what happens with Cook and Danielle Hunter as well. But as far as this trade, I like it. I think it's good, and it's telling for their new defensive coordinator, what he's looking for, what he's seen on tape, and moving forward in a new direction. I think the Vikings are going to take a lot of steps back this season. And it'll be interesting when we start talking about our predictions. But this defense is going to be a new look defense. I think there are a lot more changes coming to this defense, but especially as they switch to a 3-4, because Mike Zimmer has always been more of a primary 4-3, and I know they started the 3-4 last year, and you know that is a complete turnover from what they had been running the previous regime with Mike Zimmer. So I think they're still working the roster, trying to get those players in place so that they can become a formidable defense. But I still say, look out for a lot more changes soon to come from the Vikings.
Yeah, you are absolutely right about that. And we did talk about it last week, and we both talked about how it just feels like this franchise is shifting. It feels like it's shifting away from what they've been doing. And this is a key piece, a guy that you mentioned, and here he is on the move already. Look, he's 30 years old, but he played at a really high level last year with 10 sacks. So he's still a productive player. I think pairing him on that defensive line with Myles Garrett, who is a guy that we know is an elite pass rusher in his prime and demands so much attention from offensive lines, I think it's going to allow him to get a lot of one-on-one assignments, and I think it's going to be a great fit in Cleveland. What are your thoughts as far as the trade financially and on the field?
Well, I think financially, the Browns have been manipulating the cap very well so far, but they are going to run, not this year, but next year, they're going to have to make a lot of decisions with a lot of different players, especially in that defensive backfield. They have a couple of rookies, JOK, that I know for sure that they're going to want to keep. And they're also going to have to talk about what they want to do with Za'Darius Smith, because that contract, and I did not hear or see if they reworked it, where he has a big number coming up next year as well. And as we know, what Miles Garrett is earning. So I think next year is going to be the first year with that new Deshaun Watson contract where they're going to be run and stuck and going to really have to make some hard decisions on what they're going to do. And we're only talking about the defensive side of the ball. We're not talking about the offensive side of the ball, where Chubb is going to be coming due for a new deal and the decisions that they're going to have to make there, and as well as Amari is going to be coming. I believe he's going into the second to last year of his contract as well. So there's going to be a lot of decisions and possibly a lot of turnover on the Browns side. As for the Vikings, they cleared some cap space. They're going to start, and again, they're going to go, it looks and appears that they're going to continue to go younger and younger on the defense. So I'm interested to see how this is going to work and if they can be coached up, because this is a situation where if what we've been speaking for the last 2 weeks on, this is going to be a very young defense that is going to need a lot of coaching up to compete. Now that the division seems to be wide open with no more Aaron Rodgers, now it just seems it's just a race between the up-and-coming Lions and to see if the Vikings can build on what they did last year.
I agree with you. It just feels more and more like the Vikings are ready to rebuild this team, start rebuilding this team at least, and getting younger sooner than later. Now, later in the show, we're going to jump into the NFC East draft grades. As we know, the Eagles picked a big-time player, a guy in the first round that many people thought might just be the most talented player in this draft. But there's now reports that have come out. Jalen Carter, while at Georgia, was apparently driving with a suspended license during the night of the January 15th incident that led to misdemeanor charges of reckless driving and racing. This story has really gotten ugly because it's just one more piece to a puzzle that just seems to get messier and messier by the day. The vehicle that Carter was alleged to be racing against crashed, resulting in the death of Georgia teammate Devin Willock and UGA recruiting staffer Chandler LaCroix. Now the father of Devin Willock has filed a lawsuit against the UGA Athletic Association, claiming that the school's athletic department should be held liable for the car crash. Also in January, wide receiver Ra-Ra Thomas, I believe that's how you pronounce it, was arrested and charged with felony false imprisonment and misdemeanor battery and family violence. On top of all of that, Alex, Georgia wide receiver Denylon Morissette was arrested on multiple driving-related charges as well, including driving under the influence of drugs. He's now the fourth player from that 2022 Georgia football team to be arrested since the Bulldogs won their second straight national championship. We know this program has become a national powerhouse in recent years, but at what cost, Alex?
I mean, I think now we're starting to see that Kirby Smart is dealing with, as now as the head coach, a lot of things that we saw Alabama deal with as their players started to matriculate and they started to become a powerhouse. And they're going to see that now it's harder to remain at that top, bringing in these type of players. Now there's a lot more egos to manage, players with a lot more money that need to be managed. And now they have to stay in school for 3 years. So that's NIL money they're going to have or be continuously making for 3 years as well. So now they have money, they have fame, they're back-to-back champions for those that are still there. So it's now going to become up to Kirby Smart to see if he can manage and do some of the things that Nick Saban did in Alabama, even though they still had some issues. So there's a lot of expectation. There's going to be a lot of pressure. Interesting to see how he handles it now as the head man after being under Nick Saban for so long.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I'm totally with you. I think sometimes when you're recruiting at this level, and sometimes you just take risks on players with quote-unquote character concerns in order to attract and retain the most elite talent, Sometimes programs like this tend to look the other way when guys have red flags off the field, so to speak. And when you do things like that, sometimes it can bubble up to the surface and cause problems. Clearly, Georgia has a little bit of a black cloud over it right now, even though we know this program is coming off back-to-back national championships. On the field, they've been nothing but the gold standard right now. But these type of stories are not good. And I'm sure this is something that Kirby Smart wants to address and wants to clean up. I don't think he wants his program being known for these types of off-field incidents. And like I said, we're going to talk about Jalen Carter. I'm really curious to get your thoughts on Jalen Carter later in this episode when we talk about the Eagles and their draft grade. But before we get there, I wanted to jump into this story. I saw this online. I thought it was really interesting, Alex. We know that the New York Jets have become one of the biggest storylines heading into this season, and it's not just because they traded for Aaron Rodgers. We know that Rodgers really wouldn't even have gone to New York if they hadn't hit on so many draft picks in recent years and built such a solid young team. The one huge miss was Zach Wilson, but now GM Joe Douglas has talked about what the team could have done differently. He told Pro Football Talk, quote, "It would have been great to have a veteran quarterback like Joe Flacco that first season for Wilson. But ultimately, we made the decision to jump in head first with our youth movement. We had so many first and second year players, new staff, but sometimes you just don't get to take into account the ramifications of playing a young quarterback early in his career." What did you make of these comments by Joe Douglas talking about Wilson and maybe some regrets, it sounds like, talking about the situation, how they handled the young quarterback?
Well, as the young folks say, cap. I'm sorry, Joe Douglas. I'm not buying into it. If you watched this player at BYU, if you understood the character, we all knew this, and I am no professional at all. I'm simply a fan and a person that pays attention. This was not going to be good with him. This person in this city was not going to work. He was not the guy. It's okay. You're self-aware. You moved on from it. This guy was ill-prepared. His teammates did not like him. So this goes beyond giving him time to mature. We're simply talking about your character and if people like you or not. Before we even get to the field. So there are a lot of variables here that said this was not going to work before he even stepped on the field, outside of him having a bad tape, him not being able to pick up what was happening. We also saw the difference between when Mike White came in here, who he is more talented than Mike White. However, the teammates endeared themselves to Mike White and wanted to play and win for him. Those are the things that I'm looking at before all of the other things that we're talking about that are on field. That you can't, the players don't even like you. Your teammates do not even like you. We heard Garrett Wilson's comments. Like, you don't comment about your quarterback like that in interviews, in live interviews. That's very telling for me.
It felt like the politically correct thing to do. And I'm with you. He's trying to cover for the guy. He's trying to make it sound better by making those type of statements and saying, like, look, trying to take some of the blame and we could have done more to support him. And I get all that. But I'm with you. I just want to back up here. For one, I didn't really love this guy coming out of BYU to begin with. And for you guys that have been listening to the show these last couple of years, I thought he got overdrafted. I thought he had a nice skill set, but I didn't think he was worthy of where he was being taken and where he was being projected even before he got taken that high. I didn't love the play on the field, and I especially don't love the maturity and what we saw from him early in his career, some of the things that you spoke about there, Alex. And when you don't have the maturity and the leadership and the respect of your teammates, I don't care how good of a football player you are. At the most important position, at a leadership position like quarterback, that's going to be an issue. I give the Jets and Joe Douglas a lot of credit. Like you stated, being able to pivot, move off of him, and go in a different direction and making a big splashy move to get a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Alex, I saw this story on Sports Illustrated. I found it interesting. Apparently last week, Andrew Whitworth, former NFL offensive tackle who is now an analyst for Amazon, traveled to Austin, Texas to work out with Cowboys Micah Parsons, and it came at Parsons' request. So Whitworth said, quote, "You could tell, even in just those reps, you get a feel. Having played against a trillion guys over the years, the guys who can set you up and who have a real feel. And just in those two plays, we went against each other. I could see that ability. That was him speaking about the only time that they faced each other in the NFL. Parsons apparently told Whitworth that he'd worked with a lot of different pass rushers, but he wanted to learn from someone on the other side to learn how they would approach facing him. Whitworth said, quote, "At first I was like, I'm not sure this makes sense. Then you think about it and it's just like, what a genius idea. Why wouldn't you want that?" Alex, we always hear about guys asking veterans or players on other teams that play the same position for advice or to work with them, pick their brain. But I've never heard of a player asking a guy who would normally line up against them to work with them on their game. It seems really simple when you think about it, a really simple idea, but it really is a genius idea. And it makes me wonder how much more we're going to see stories like this going forward.
Yeah, and this will probably be one of the few times you hear me use a basketball reference. If you recall back when LeBron was in Miami, there was a whole thing about him not knowing what to do in the post. And as a guard, he went and worked with one of the greats, Hakeem Olajuwon. And those are two obviously different players, two different style players, but he took the time to go work with him. And this is what I see here. This is a player newly moved permanently from outside linebacker down to a permanent defensive end. And now he's like, okay, so I'm going to be playing this. I want to master this as well. So not why not go to one of the best offensive tackles in the league who still have ability because they're only 1 year removed and I can still physically get on the field and we can physically do some things. I think it shows character. I think it shows leadership. And I think it shows this guy not only wants to be one of the best, he wants to be the best edge rusher in the league. And if I'm Jerry Jones, I'm applauding this. I'm looking at this. And also, I'm also, as well as if I'm Micah, I'm saying this is cachet for when it's contract time because I'm working on it. And this is what I want. I want to be the highest paid defensive player in the league. And this is going to become part of it by me getting better at my craft. So the two and two go hand in hand. If you work on it over here and you succeed there, you will be paid. So I applaud Micah Parsons because this is, as you said, this isn't something that we've heard before. And it's probably not new. It's probably just more high profile. So we're hearing about it. I guarantee you this has happened before. It's just the fact that it's somebody this high profile that's doing it and doing it at the level that he's doing it where you would think, oh, he already has everything put together. And he's like, no, I'm not. I can get better. And to tell you the truth, that's scary if you're on the other side of that.
Man, you're not kidding. That is scary because we're talking about one of the best defensive players in the entire league. And I think he's just starting to scrape the surface of his potential and working with a veteran guy, a guy that's out of the league now, obviously, like you mentioned, but a guy that played a long time in this league, started a lot of games in this league, went up against a lot of elite pass rushers over the years. He saw a lot of different styles and a lot of different techniques. A really, really good veteran that Andrew Whitworth was, who had a lot of success in this league. So for him to not only find a guy like Whitworth, but just to kind of think outside the box with that idea and think, you know, I could go work with Von Miller, I could go work with Myles Garrett or one of these other elite guys. Maybe they can show me some things. But to think about it from a different perspective and think about like, hey, I'm going to go get an offensive lineman who has a wealth of knowledge on how to block elite pass rushers and see what he thinks. I just thought it was a really cool story. And I applaud it too, Alex. I think it really shows the drive and the determination that Micah Parsons has to be great. And you're right. Scary is the perfect word. Schedule release was last week, but this is our first opportunity to jump into it. The schedule is always fun. It's just fun to look at who's playing who, when these teams are matching up, how the NFL puts it together. It's always just a cool kind of thing to kind of take a look at and project what's going to happen and matchups that we'd like. So let's jump into it, Alex. Let's start with winners and losers because it feels like every year there's always a few teams in the NFL that you look at the schedule and you say, man, that team kind of got screwed. And there's always another couple teams that you look at and you say, boy, they kind of got an easier path here than most. Who are some winners and losers for the NFL schedule?
I'm going to go with the loser first. the New York Giants. They were unkind to a team that actually overachieved and came in third place but made the playoffs. I mean, if you get into the meat of their schedule, once you get past week four, they're at Miami and Buffalo. They come home for Washington and New York. Then they head west to Vegas, and they're on the road, Vegas, Dallas, Washington, only to come back home and face New England. That stretch from week five to week 12, that'll tell us everything we need to know about the team, because that is a rough, rough schedule. We know Miami is talented. We know Buffalo's talented. Washington will have to wait and see. Vegas will have to wait and see. But New York and Dallas and New England, yet that's that middle of right before they go on a bye, that is a rough, rough, rough patch for me. And that in those 7 weeks, they are on the road five of those 7 weeks, and a lot in the Midwest and on the West Coast as well. So I don't like this. This is not going to fare, personally, not going to fare well for them coming into the season.
Alex, I got the Giants written down as one of my losers as well. I don't know how the NFL even approved this schedule, because you're right. This is brutal. Week one versus Dallas on Sunday Night Football. We know Dallas is a really solid team, one of the best teams in the NFC, and they're going to play Dallas twice a year. It's a division team. I get that. But to open with them on a big stage is just kind of a tough way to start the year. But then seven of New York's next nine games are on the road. That's a brutal stretch to start the year. You touched on it. And then two of their home games in that opening stretch are against the Cowboys and the Seahawks, both playoff teams from last year, as well as Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. This schedule is so brutal, and it's really unfortunate because, like you said, this is a team that in a lot of ways overachieved. They're a rebuilding team. They're coming off of a really nice season where they made the playoffs and even won a road playoff game. To get rewarded with a schedule like this feels like they insulted somebody. Who's a winner that you've got for the schedule, a team that you're looking at and you think, man, they've got a pretty good path here?
New Orleans Saints. I love this schedule for the New Orleans Saints. You open up against Tennessee, then you're at Carolina, you're at Green Bay, you're at home versus Tampa Bay. Those are all winnable games. Then you go to New England, which will, anytime you go into a Bill Belichick coach team, you're gonna have a tough time. But then you are at Houston versus Jacksonville. Could be tough in Jacksonville, but then at Indy, Chicago, Minnesota, Atlanta, Detroit, Carolina. You know, I like this. Someone said in a space that we share that they saw the New Orleans Saints going 13-4. And now that I'm saying it out loud, it's not too far-fetched, but I won't speculate on what a record will be. But I can see this team getting double-digit wins. And we all know they're already the favorite to win the South. But this is a very favorable schedule. And there's a couple of easy wins from my perspective opening up, even though I can't wait till we get to Green Bay because I have a take on that. But this is going to be very interesting because there's a lot of space for the New Orleans Saints to create some distance between them and the rest of the South. So I love that schedule for them.
I've got a winner for you, Alex. How about the Baltimore Ravens? Not only do they have a three-game home stretch, which very few teams have that, but they're also one of the only teams that don't have a three-game road stretch this entire season. They also host two warm weather teams in the month of December versus the Rams and the Dolphins. Feels like they're getting a little extra home field advantage with this schedule for Baltimore.
I mean, and we can actually throw Jacksonville in there as well, as a warm weather as well. So, yeah, I do like it. I like it for Lamar. I like it for that offense. I like it for what they've done on defense as well. If Lamar stays healthy, this is another double-digit win season for the Ravens, and they could be, depending on how the Bengals and Pittsburgh and the Browns do, they can run away with this division as well.
Yeah, I think it favors them for sure. And like you said, this is a really deep division, maybe the deepest division in all of football. But that schedule is certainly going to help them out. And obviously now bringing back Lamar Jackson on a new contract, feels like momentum is kind of rolling their way here. What about another loser?
I have a lot to say here. The Buffalo Bills. I am looking at the Buffalo Bills, and Brady, you've heard me say this before. I don't have the Buffalo Bills making the playoffs. I think this is going to be a step back year for them. There's going to be a lot of changes on that offensive line. There's a lot of change on the defense, even though Sean McDermott is a defensive-minded coach, but there's a lot of step back. You lost Tremaine Edmonds. You're now kind of looking a little bit in the window who's going to be. I know Matt Milano is set to become that middle linebacker, but still, you lost that. He was one of the top middle linebackers in this league. Go through this schedule. First off, opening up at New York. New York has their number, and they've had their number since, at least since last year. And that defense has only gotten stronger. And now you're bringing in Aaron Rodgers. And then you can look like you could probably go maybe perhaps 3-1 in your first four. But then you go to Jacksonville, you go to New York, you go to New England, you have Tampa, you have Denver, then you have New York, and you have Philly. Week 5 through week 12, you are going to be facing some tough teams with great coaching and great players, and there are a couple of primetime games is there as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see if Buffalo can survive, because even after playing Philadelphia, they go into a bye week, only to come right back and have to face Kansas City, Dallas, the Chargers, and New England, and Miami again. Teams that all give them trouble and that all have good to great quarterbacks or good to great coaching as well. So this is, to me, is going to be a very, very tough year. And from my own personal opinion, the Buffalo Bills will not make the playoffs this year.
You heard it, guys. Buffalo Bills taking a big step back. And this schedule might be a big reason why, because I'm with you. It is a grind. My other loser, as far as the schedule goes, Alex, the Las Vegas Raiders. They start on the road in weeks 1 and 2, both with hostile environments in Denver and Buffalo. And we know Denver is a team that they'll be interesting to talk about in this offseason, Alex, because what direction do they go? We'll get into them a little bit later, but that's still not an easy place to play. Week 4, they're going to play a talented Chargers team. They have early home games in Vegas that will have a ton of away fans because the Steelers, Packers, and Patriots all come into town before week 6. So add that with home games versus the two New York teams. The second half of the season has both Kansas City games as well. This is a tough schedule for a Raiders team trying to break in a new quarterback and get things back on track.
And as we all know, I am a Raiders fan. And looking at the schedule, we can literally open up 0-6. Just simply looking at the first 6 games before you get something where you may not necessarily a cakewalk, but something that you're more talented than on paper when you get to week 7 in Chicago. So the first 3 weeks, we know Denver, we know they're going to be well coached. That's the first thing that we know, and they're going to play defense. The offense, if they do any semblance of a offense, they can win their game. Buffalo, they're still a tough team. Pittsburgh is always well coached, and the Chargers and Raiders is a rivalry game, so we know how that feels. And then you face Green Bay and New England. And like I said, I have high hopes. I'm very high on Green Bay and I can't wait to talk about it whenever we get there. And then you have New England, and that's going to be a revenge game for Bill Belichick. We all know that. So I can honestly see them open up 0-6. And if you open up 0-6 in the NFL, you're pretty much backing yourself where you have to win every game going forward, or you only have very limited room for error and maybe losing one game before you're just simply out and you're just playing out the string and you're already halfway out the door to Cancun. But I agree with you on the Raiders.
My other winner here might surprise you. I've got the Kansas City Chiefs, Alex. Now, look, not an easy schedule. I get it. But playing a weak NFC North 4 times, I think that helps a lot. And 3 of their toughest matchups, the Eagles, Bills, and Bengals, all come to Kansas City this year. So, yes, there's a lot of good teams on the schedule, but it feels like the schedule makers gave them a little bit of a break here.
Yeah, the Super Bowl champs caught a break here. But I think we're going to see a very different Kansas City team. And I think we touched on it a little bit last week when we were talking about Isaiah Pacheco and the signings that they did with Donovan Smith as well than we're accustomed to. And this schedule allows them the opportunity to work that schedule. So by the time they get to the end of the season, it's a fine-tuned machine. So the schedule guys were very, very, very kind to the Kansas City Chiefs. I have one last winner, and it actually coincides with what I said last week as my offensive rookie of the year, the Carolina Panthers. Looking at this schedule, It's not tough. However, I like it for what that team is, and they have a defense and they have a running game, and have run game will travel. And I like what I see on this schedule. I mean, Atlanta, New Orleans, Seattle, Minnesota, Detroit, Miami, they can basically go 3-3 or maybe even end up 4-2 before they hit an early bye in week 7. And then you come back and you face Houston, Indy, and Chicago. From my perspective, all winnable games, because those are all teams that have the same question marks as Houston, Carolina. So these are all push games. And then you face Dallas, but then you go back to Tennessee and Tampa, two teams that have question marks as well, before you head back to New Orleans. And then, but they have more question mark teams that they're playing that are going to give them an opportunity to win. And I do not be surprised if the Carolina Panthers end up with a winning season. I'm not saying playoffs, that they are simply saying that they end up with a winning season, because we know that defense is a real deal defense. And you have an offensive coach with a rookie quarterback and those weapons. And now all you have to do is hope that that offensive line can hold. And I think you can see some good things from the Carolina Panthers early on in Bryce Young's career, which is why I picked him for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
I like it, Alex. I think that is a team that is maybe kind of a sneaky pick to overachieve. Later in the year, I think we might jump into some over-under win season win totals. That's a team I might be hitting the over on, because I'm with you. I think the schedule is favorable. I like that young defense. I've liked that defense for the last couple of years. It's really rounded into shape. And now you've got a young play caller and a new coach, kind of new momentum for Carolina. And if they can put it together and the offense can play at a higher level like we think they can, I think this is a team that could be a little better than people think. Maybe a sneaky good team in the NFC South. So I like that pick a lot. Hey, PGF Nation, are you tired of the same old bland food at your tailgate parties? Well, let me tell you about my friends at The Tailgate Foodie, the seasoning and barbecue sauce company that specializes in elevating your tailgate and backyard cooking game. With their unique blend of spices and sauces, the Tailgate Foodie will take your taste buds on a flavor journey that you won't forget. Use code PINTGLASSFOODIE for 15% off your first order at thetailgatefoodie.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP, and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Hey there, PGF Nation. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. So next time you're cracking open a cold one and settling in for the big game, make sure you've got Liquid IV by your side. Trust me, your body will thank you. NFL schedule release. With the release, obviously, comes all the big matchups, right? Everyone likes to look ahead and circle those big matchup games, the ones that we're really looking forward to. We're going to look at some primetime games, maybe some under-the-radar games that we really like. Alex, why don't you kick things off? What are some games that you're circling for 2023?
Week one, the Bengals versus the Browns. The Bengals, to me, are going to take a step back. You lost Jesse Bates. You lost Von Bell. You lost Eli Apple. You did drawing a blank on who they draft. They did draft a cornerback, but that's a lot to lose in the defensive backfield. And I know I picked Miles Murphy as my defensive rookie of the year, but that's still going to be a lot for him to come on in week one. It's going to take some time for him to figure things out and find his way, at least from my perspective, figure out and find his way. And I think we can see a new-look Browns, Deshaun Watson, coming back, determined to prove all the naysayers wrong, to say that he still has it with that plethora of weapons, that offensive line and that running game, as well as newly acquired Za'Darius Smith. So I'm looking at that as a coming out party for Deshaun Watson early on to make a statement game early in the beginning of the season.
That is a sneaky good matchup, and it's a sneaky good rivalry in the state of Ohio, AFC North. Black and blue division, two teams with pretty big expectations here. Now, we know the Bengals are one of the AFC favorites. They've been an AFC contender these last couple of years, one of the best young quarterbacks in football with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase. There's some big household names on that Bengals team, and they've got a lot of good things going there. But you hit on it. They're missing some key pieces, especially on the defense. Now, I thought they did a really nice job addressing some of those players in the draft. If you didn't listen, go back. Last week, we broke down their draft class, the AFC North. They hit it out of the park, but those guys are going to have to come in week one. Some of these guys are going to have to start week one and be ready to play right away. And even the best rookies, that can be tough. So going up against a guy like Deshaun Watson, who's got a lot to prove, and a Browns team that, like you said, made a move for Za'Darius Smith for a reason, because they feel like they're in win now mode. They feel like they still have a roster that is good enough to be competitive in the AFC, and they want to try to get a return on this investment with all the money they put up to get a guy like Deshaun Watson. They want to start putting it together this year. So this is going to be a really fun way to start the season in the AFC North. I love that matchup, Alex. I'm going to jump to week one as well. Primetime matchup, the opening Monday Night Football game. This might be some low-hanging fruit, I'll admit, Alex, but Bills at the Jets, the debut of Aaron Rodgers with the New York Jets on Monday Night Football to kick off the season versus Josh Allen, the rival Bills. This is built for prime time. I mean, this game just screams Monday Night Football. Both teams are viewed as AFC contenders. It is going to be a lot of fun to watch this game, a lot of star power in this game. Get your popcorn ready for Monday Night Football week one.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, the Jets had the Bills number last year. They actually hurt Josh Allen as well. So this is a rivalry game. This is going to be a game that's going to really tell a lot, at least set the tone for the Jets. This is a tone setter game to me for the Jets. You want to go out there and you want to punish the Bills to let them know that you're here and you plan on taking the division, that this is no longer a cakewalk, that you're here and you're here to stay. So I look for this to be a great game and a tone setter. Sticking with the Jets theme, week six, I have the Eagles versus the Jets. I want to see these defensive lines and these offensive lines go to war, because this is a game, this is an old school, I'm going to be watching the trenches, because this game, as we always say, these games are one of the trenches, but specifically this one, with the way these defenses are set up, we will be watching what's going on in the trenches to see who will win this game by week six. Everybody should be warmed up. We should be rocking and rolling. Everybody should have gotten all the hits they need to get in, because as we know, most players don't play during the preseason, but everybody should be warmed up. Everybody should be battle tested and ready to go. And that Eagles versus the Jets week six is a game that I want to see, that I want to watch, that I'm looking for to see those trenches, and that I'm literally going to be watching as soon as it's ready. I'm going to be watching the All 22 and watch the trenches and see how this game was won in the battle that were won and lost in the trenches.
Yeah, PGF Nation, you guys already know I've been saying it for years, and I will always say it. The game is won and lost in the trenches. It always will be, and I'm with you. Anytime you get a great matchup between the big boys up front, it's always great football, and that one is going to be one to circle for sure. Interesting storylines. You've got the Eagles coming off that NFC Championship Super Bowl appearance coming up just short. Can they get back there? Are the Jets legit contenders now that Aaron Rodgers? By week six, we're going to have a pretty good idea of just how good this team is, but this is definitely a measuring stick game. One of the games I've got circled a few weeks earlier, Alex, is going to be week three. The other New York team, I've got the Giants, San Francisco 49ers, Thursday night football game, two playoff teams from the NFC last year, but real question marks with these teams. Like, who's going to be the 49ers quarterback by that point in the season? And quite frankly, does it matter? Because it feels like any quarterback can find success with Kyle Shanahan's offense, but who's under center? How are they playing? We know it's still one of the best rosters in the league. Facing a Giants team that we talked a little bit about earlier, they took a big step forward last year with Brian Daboll, but now can they build off that success? Playing one of the best teams in the NFC is a great way to find out where this team is early in the season, how good they really are, and regardless of who's under center for the Niners, this is a fun matchup.
My next pick is also the 49ers as well, because then I had the same thought process of who's going to be behind center and does it really matter? But it'll be interesting to see, because I think depending upon who's behind center, the Giants, if Daniel Jones and that offense can build on what they did last year, I think they can surprise the 49ers. Even though they have that great defense and they beefed up a lot on that defensive line, I wouldn't sleep on the Giants and Brian Daboll pulling out a couple of tricks from under his sleeve. I'm looking at week 16, the Ravens versus the 49ers, because by this point in time, and I chose this game specifically because I said by this point in time, Purdy will be back and we'll know if they moved off, did they stick with Sam Darnold? Did they move to Brock Purdy? Or who's going to be under center? Whoever will be under center will at least have been under center, I would say, for a strong 6 to 7 weeks by this point in time. And the Ravens coming in, I think both teams will be vying for a playoff position. I look at that week 16 matchup in San Francisco to be a pivotal game that may or may not decide home field advantage for one of those teams.
Yeah, that's a really fun matchup. Two teams that love to play a physical brand of football, love to run the football, smash mouth. That's a fun one. That's a really good matchup. Two great coaches. I definitely am looking forward to that one as well. I've got another Jets game on here, and I know we're going back to that well a lot, but let's face it, Aaron Rodgers makes this team really interesting. And anytime you get a chance to play the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday night football in week four, it's going to be a circle game for me. The Jets are hoping that Aaron Rodgers at quarterback is going to make them a Super Bowl contender. We know that this game, just like I mentioned earlier with the Giants and kind of seeing where they're going to be, this is a measuring stick game for the Jets early in the season to see if they can play with the best teams in the NFL on a big stage. Not only that, Rodgers and Mahomes have somehow never played against each other. So I think that just adds another level of juice to this big game.
Absolutely. And as always, we're like-minded, because that was my primetime pick as well. The Chiefs versus the Jets week four. Again, like you were saying, same points that you made. They've never faced off before. It's a big time quarterback matchup. We're going to get it on Sunday night. Everybody's going to be tuned in. We're going to be able to see if that Jets defense and Aaron Rodgers is ready to take on what the Chiefs have and whatever Andy Reid has in store for them. I can't wait. That's one of my – I actually have that one starred as a must-watch event during this season.
I've got a couple under-the-radar favorite games here, Alex. One of those is week one, Broncos-Raiders. We touched on this a little bit earlier when we were talking about the winners and losers of the schedule. Two AFC West teams – that really fell short of expectations last year. Raiders move on from longtime quarterback Derek Carr for Jimmy Garoppolo. That's an interesting storyline this season for them. McDaniels must feel like the former Patriot just fits his offense better. That's really the only thinking that I think makes sense here for why he would make that move. I said a long time ago, it feels like a lateral move in a lot of ways, but we're going to see if it pays off. And week one is going to be a really quick way to find out just how good this offense is going to look, because the Broncos defense finished in the top 10 in a whole bunch of different categories last year. So this is going to be a big test for Jimmy G and this team. The Broncos' struggles last year almost entirely were on the offensive side of the ball. Russell Wilson was supposed to come in and make this team a contender, and he had by far his worst season of his career. And man, it was ugly. I mean, it was really ugly. We know that. Nate Hackett was fired after only 15 games in Denver. Now enter Sean Payton. Can he fix this offense and this quarterback, or is Wilson just simply not the guy anymore? A really interesting week one game.
We all know that defense was lights out, and I believe it was the first 10 games. Had they scored at least 19 points, they would have gone 9-1 in those first 10 games, and they were the lowest scoring team in the NFL last year. So you bring it into Sean Payton, the offensive guru, see if he could come and fix that offense. If that defense plays to the level they played last year and he can get some, let's just say he can score maybe 24 points a game, this team is going to be a problem for the not just the AFC, but the entire NFL going forward. I'll give you one more under the radar one. I say week four, Lions versus Packers. Again, I'm very, very high on the Packers, and we'll get into that more when we go over the Packers. But the up-and-coming Lions versus that Packers team, we're going to be able to see what Matt LaFleur can really do. As we know, there's always been a little back and forth with him and Aaron, and sometimes maybe Aaron is changing those plays. We know Jordan Love is going to play within the scheme, similar to a lot of the things that Geno Smith did up in Seattle. We're going to watch him play within the scheme and see what happens. And they improve that defense more by getting my favorite defensive player, Luke Van Ness. I can't wait to see what this team looks like versus in-division rival in the Lions. I think that's a big game week four, and that's on Monday night as well.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. And I've got another under-the-radar game to wrap it up here, Alex, and I know you're going to be circling this one on your schedule as well. Texans, Panthers, week eight. This is the kind of treat that the NFL sprinkled in for all of us NFL draft junkies, because Bryce Young versus CJ Stroud, two rookie quarterbacks that went 1 and 2 in the draft. They were considered easily the two best quarterbacks in this class, both trying to change the trajectory of these franchises. Now, regardless of what these teams' records are by week eight, I don't think it matters, because this matchup is going to be must-watch TV. I know it is at my house. Two new head coaches, Frank Reich trying to prove that the last team made a big mistake by getting rid of him. The other, a rookie head coach who might have been the hottest name in coaching circles last offseason, in D'Amico Ryans. Boy, this is a fun one to watch, even though it's not your typical big national splashy type of game. I think for the diehard fans and the guys like you and me that love the draft and love watching these young guys, this is a must-watch game.
Absolutely, and you will pull in also the Alabama and Ohio State fans, because this will just be simply Alabama versus Ohio State for a lot of people as well. Sprinkling Derek Stingley from LSU and all the other guys that are here. I would not be surprised if this had a raucous type of college atmosphere during this game, but it's the first and second pick facing off, and basically to say, who made the mistake? That's, you know, as sometimes the media, they create a narrative and say, well, whoever wins this game, they made the right decision at quarterback, or whoever looks better, this was the right decision. So this will be one of those games from a media standpoint that makes it entertaining and interesting for headlines the next day.
The NFC East draft grades, one of the most historic divisions in all of the NFL, the only division in the NFL where every single team has at least one Lombardi trophy. Man, these teams are always fun to cover no matter what time of year it is. Why don't you kick things off, Alex?
I'm going to start with the Cowboys. And this is also the division that I don't believe for 2 years in a row they've had the same division winner. I think for the past 12 years, they've had a different division winner every single year, even if it's flip-flop back and forth between the Cowboys and the Eagles for a few years. So looking at the Cowboys, first-round pick, Mozzie Smith, stalwart, strong at the point of attack. They needed a defensive tackle because they ranked 22nd in defense last year. And 22nd in rush defense last year. And when you look at who and how they got destroyed by the run going down the stretch, 207 to Green Bay, 106 to Indy, 114 to Houston, 192 to Jacksonville, 151 to the Commanders. They just struggled on stopping the run. They could rush the passer, but they could not stop the run. So they went and got a stalwart, a guy that's strong at the point of attack, that can stand up there and hold those offensive linemen accountable while the linebackers come in and clean things up. Hopefully he meets what they're looking for and can help that line along. And you're playing with DeMarcus Lawrence on one side and the ever-improving Micah Parsons on the other side. So again, this is a person that's going to see a lot of one-on-ones, and he should be able to take advantage. And that would ultimately help that run game. Second-round pick, Luke Schoenmaker, and I hope I'm saying his name right. Now, I was a little confused about this because they still have Jake Ferguson. I know they let the other tight end go. I thought they could have gone in a different direction here, and I probably would have been looking at cornerback in the second round, but perhaps at the 27th pick, there wasn't somebody there that they liked, so they did go and get the tight end, Schoenmaker, which tells me they're going to be in some 12 personnel. And with the new offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, maybe there's some things that they can do there with Jake Ferguson and Luke Schoenmaker there and putting them in 12 personnel with the run game as well. Solid tight end, can do both. He's more of a flex tight end, but he has shown the ability to block. I'm not sure as how much strong at the point of attack that he is, but he can be an inline blocker at times, but he's probably more going to be a flex, and maybe perhaps they flex out both tight ends and create mismatches. Third round pick, Demarvion Overshawn. This is kind of where I started to have a little bit of an issue with what they were doing. An okay player, flashed a little bit here and there, was very good with tackles for losses, but I'm not sure if this is a starter or if this is just a body. I'm not high on him at all. And even if we continue to go down, I can run through a few of these guys. Villaami Fioko, again, another guy I'm not sure about. This is a lot of these are just bodies to me right now. I'm not sure if they have any impact. Asim Richards, they do need help on the offensive line. This is a guy that's probably going to be able to play swing tackle and maybe at times maybe be able to play inside. They did need this type of player after losing Connor McGovern. So they now have a guy, even though this is a fifth round pick, played at North Carolina, was blocking for, which probably is going to be a number one or number two pick next year in Drake May. So he has better pass blocking ability. So that should be, he should be able to come in and be able to pass block. Run blocking is a little bit more simple on the professional level. It's the pass blocking and stunts and things that you have to get accustomed to. But the way North Carolina was throwing, perhaps he fits the mold of what the Cowboys have going on. And I want to mention Deuce Vaughn simply because I think it was a great moment watching his father, who's on the scout staff, call up his son and tell him that he's going to be drafted by the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously undersized at 5'5", 179. They do need a running back, obviously, with Pollard coming off of the broken leg, and they no longer have Zeke. So it's really just a one-man show back there, and there's been speculation that they're also going to bring back Zeke at a lower rate. And I also want to make part of their grade because they did trade a fifth-round pick for a very solid and consistent wide receiver in Brandon Cooks. With all that being said, I give them a C+, and that's really because the middle of their draft, I just didn't like what I saw in the third round on, with the exception of Asim Richards, who I think will see a lot of snaps at a lot of different positions. But I didn't like the rest of the draft. But getting Brandon Cooks and getting Mozzie, I give them a C+.
I think that's fair, Alex. I think I'm with you. And for a lot of the reasons you said, I like Mozzie Smith. When we did the mock draft, we circled defensive tackle as the position that they should target there. It's exactly what they did. You hit on it perfectly. That's a pretty good pick. It's by far their best pick. It was by far their biggest need. So I give them some credit there. I think Luke Schoenmaker, tight end out of Michigan, solid player. Didn't think he was the best tight end on the board in the second round, though. Really deep tight end class. We talked about that. Not sure I would have gone with him in that direction. Not that he's a bad player, but I think I would have gone somewhere else. DeMarvian Overshown, linebacker, good player, flashes at times, but I'm with you. Not sure he's a big impact guy. I thought the Deuce Vaughn selection was cool, and I actually think there might be some value there too. That late in the draft, this guy has some serious talent. To add to that running back room, I think is important, and to do it with that late of a pick, I think could be good value. But I'm with you. It's kind of a ho-hum draft for the Cowboys. Really nothing to get excited about. Let's jump into the Washington Commanders, Alex. With their first pick, 16th overall, they took Emmanuel Forbes, the cornerback out of Mississippi State. I understand taking a corner here. Washington secondary needed help. This defense ranked 26th in takeaways last year. Emmanuel Forbes had 6 pick sixes and 14 total interceptions in college. So this guy's a ball hawk. He can take it away and make big plays. But here's the thing. He's 6'1", 166 pounds. That's not a typo. I mean, this guy is really, really thin. I like the player. Don't get me wrong. And he's a quick read and react player, great ball skills, but he's a weak tackler because of his lack of size and his play strength. He's definitely has some holes there, and I think teams are going to take advantage running to his side of the field as well. I had a second round grade on Forbes. I thought he was a really solid prospect. I never imagined him going in the top 16 picks here. And here's the other part of this pick that I didn't like. Christian Gonzalez went the next pick to the Patriots. You guys know how high we are on Christian Gonzalez. I don't like that move at all. But not only that, Deontay Banks and Joey Porter Jr. all went after him. And I had higher grades on all of those guys. Once again, I like the player, but not at 16 overall. In the second round, with the 47th pick, they took Jartavius Martin, the safety out of Illinois. This is a cornerback, safety, kind of a hybrid player prospect who I think most likely at the NFL level is going to play nickel corner. Once again, I understand addressing the secondary here, but Martin in the second round felt like a reach. I think this is a guy that would have still been available a round later. He was my 5th ranked safety in a really weak safety class. So seeing him come off the board here was really surprising. He's an explosive athlete. He has traits that you're looking for, but his tape was really inconsistent. He also struggles with bigger body pass catchers. I like the versatility. I like what he can do on the defensive side of the ball, and I like those athletic traits that I talked about, but I think there was better value on the board at pick 47. In the third round, the Commanders took Ricky Stromberg, the center out of Arkansas. Really solid player. This is a guy who didn't allow a single sack or a quarterback hit in his senior season. A lot of experience in the SEC, started 45 games at Arkansas. He's not the most explosive athlete, and sometimes his body control can get away from him at times. I think he has the ability, though, to become a starter. But once again, here's a theme building here with the Commanders. Most analysts had a 4th round grade or even later on him. So taking him in the 3rd, not sure that's great value here with this pick either. In the 4th round, they took Braden Daniels, offensive guard out of Utah. Really good athlete, really moves well. He's got light feet. He fires off the ball. He can sustain drive blocks. Does a nice job recovering quickly when he does get out of position, but he needs to hit the weight room, needs to work on some footwork issues. Just a solid 4th round pick. When I look at this draft class, though, Alex, I'm just not sure why the Commanders spent their most valuable draft picks on just secondary and interior offensive linemen. Not only could they have addressed some other positions that they needed, but they also reached on those first 3 picks. Nothing about this class is exciting. And add to the fact that they also passed on Will Levis and Hendon Hooker, for that matter. So I understand that they like Sam Howell, but this is a guy who was a 5th round pick last year. I think taking a higher ceiling rookie quarterback to, at the very least, Alex, compete with Sam Howell, I think would have made a lot more sense with one of those early picks. I'm giving them a D. Alex, I was really not impressed with what Washington did here.
I can agree with being down on this draft, and I wonder how this worked and the inner workings of what was going on with Washington versus being in the middle of that sale and nothing being confirmed yet, and who was at the helm of okaying everything. I know there's a GM and there's a scouting staff there, but ownership does matter, and what the direction of new ownership may want matters as well. And with that deal not being done, I know they could not confidently openly make suggestions or have their people involved in this. You know, I'm big on structure within teams. The structure of this team, you could see by the draft, was not there. Now, they did need cornerback help, as we knew they were very strong up front in the front four, but I thought they also needed linebacker help, and to wait till the seventh round to grab one, I just didn't understand that. Emmanuel Forbes, I did see him rising up some boards, but obviously, definitely, and 1,000% not over Christian Gonzalez. Good player, though. There were a lot of erratic picks, and to your point, which is why when we look at this draft, it's kind of all over the place, and it's like, well, why did you do this? Why did you do that? And you know, a lot of things I don't think would have happened had they had the full structure in place. So I'm going to agree with you. A D, C minus at the most, but a D for right now. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take a look at the defending NFC champions, the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, we know that the Eagles had a plethora of picks. They moved around a lot. They did a lot of different things. Two number ones this year. They had two number threes. Howie Roseman, I think since he's been a part of the Eagles, he's been making very smart moves. Now, not everybody hits, but his hit rate, which I think is at 56 to 57% hit rate in the first round, when the average, I believe, is 52%, puts him in the upper 10% of GMs that are hitting on their first round picks. And then as you go through the draft, you can see why. We'll start at the top. Jalen Carter, who was considered the best, one of the, if not the best player in the draft. We saw this guy at Georgia. When you lose a player that looks like and plays like Jordan Davis, you get exposed or you step up, and you are who you are. And Jalen Carter stepped up, and he was who he was this season, helping Georgia to another national championship. Seven tackles for loss, three sacks. I mean, this guy is 6'3", 314 pounds. Hand 10 in one quarter. I mean, this guy is just a wrecking ball in the middle. Now you're telling me you're going to put him next to Brandon Graham, Josh Sweat, who's still there. He's going to be able to get taught by Fletcher Cox. This defensive line, they didn't lose anybody. They just retooled and got younger. And I know people have been calling them the Philadelphia Bulldogs, the Philadelphia Bulldogs. But hey, there's not, I mean, if you keep going to the well and the well keeps giving you water, why not continue on? But they did keep that. It will see throughout this draft that they did keep the same thing, because with their second pick in the first round, number 31, they grab linebacker Nolan Smith. Now, you have Hassan Reddick on one side, and they run a 3-4, where Hassan Reddick more plays like an edge rusher on the outside. So I found this very interesting, because I had Nolan Smith pegged as a 3-4 outside linebacker edge rusher. But if you're going to put him and you're going to rush him the same way as Hassan Reddick, not only now did you replenish and you have a flowing defensive lineman between Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, and Fletcher Cox, you now have Hassan Reddick. And then, oh, if he gets tired, here comes Nolan Smith. So that pass rush, they may not be as successful as they were last year in terms of the amount of double-digit sacks across that, but the pressure that they can now apply looks like they're going to be able to maintain that. And even though sacks look great on a stat sheet, but when you watch the tape, it's the pressure, because the pressure causes errors on the back end of that defense. So I like those two top picks. They didn't have a second round pick, but then you go to the third round, they grab Tyler Steen. I had been saying that Lane Johnson, injury riddled, stalwart man, will play injured. If he had no arms, he's going to be out there trying to block. But I think now you grab a guy in Tyler Steen and you can start to rotate, because as I mentioned before, as we were talking about this, maybe around pod number two, I said one of the things I was worried about with Philadelphia was Jason Kelce getting a little bit long in the tooth and Lane Johnson very injury prone and just not going to be able to continue at that high level if those injuries start to pile up. But you grab Tyler Steen, solid player. I don't think he's elite in any way, shape, or form, but big, 6'6", 321 pounds. And again, this is the same thing I said about Jalen Carter and I said about Nolan Smith. You can grab a guy who played at a high level at a big school, and he gets a chance to get taught and help clean up anything that we see on tape from college to the pros. He gets to be taught by the best in Lane Johnson. So I love that pick in the third round. Second third round pick, Sidney Brown. Now, I know they lost Marcus Epps actually to my Raiders. Sidney Brown's more of a box safety. He's a little bit on the small side to me at 5'10", but he's thick at 211 pounds. I think this is a guy that you can get some play out of. I'm not sure if he would ever develop into a starter. The fourth round pick. Here's where I thought they got high value, but I'm very interested to see how these players translate. One thing I always say about these Alabama players and these Georgia players is when you're on one of these type of defenses, everybody's not a hit. Somebody is taking advantage of the players that are in front of them. So if you have a Jordan Davis, you have Nolan Smith, you have Jalen Carter, you have these huge rushers in front of you causing havoc up front, which causes terrible things on the back end for a quarterback, which makes Kelee Ringo, puts him in place to make a lot of plays. But I will say this about Kelee Ringo, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on it when I finish, Brad. Kelee Ringo at 6'2", 207 pounds, running a 4.36. I wonder if they view him as a guy that would be great as a rover or could possibly be moved to safety. I'm keeping an eye on that. I do like him, but I want to see where they keep him, if they're going to keep him at corner, if they're going to try and move him around and play, have him play more of a hybrid corner safety position, maybe if they go big nickel at times as well. I'm going to talk about the sixth round pick only because it's a quarterback in Tanner McKee. I like Tanner McKee. The only issue I have here is he doesn't fit the offense in which they run. You know, had they drafted the quarterback out of UCLA, I would have felt like, okay, that makes a little bit more sense. But here with Tanner McKee, this is 6'6". He's a quarterback that I actually like. When I was looking at him and I scouted him, I actually like him. I just don't like where he is, even though Philadelphia is a very strong organization. I just don't know with the type of offense that they run, a 6'6", 231-pound quarterback in the middle of that line, he's not going to be able to run outside or do anything special, some of the special things that we've seen from Jalen Hurts. I like the player. I don't like the landing place. But overall, I'm going to give the Philadelphia Eagles an A because they replaced Javon Hargrove with Jalen Carter. They got another backup for Hassan Reddick that can come right there and help pass rush with Nolan Smith. I like Tyler Steen. They went and got things that they needed to help that offensive and that defensive line. And I like Kelee Ringo. So I'm going to give them an A. Maybe perhaps for the first time in a long time, we get the same winner out of NFC East. So I give the Philadelphia Eagles an A.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with, Alex. It really is. Now, Jalen Carter is the big question mark because we've talked about it a bunch on here. We talked about him earlier with some of the off-field issues. On top of that, we talked about in earlier episodes him showing up out of shape to his pro day. And there's a lot of red flags about Jalen Carter. There's a reason that, quote-unquote, the best player in this draft slid to 9, especially in a draft that was viewed as a pretty weak draft class. And you've got a guy who's a blue chip, big time prospect, a guy that on paper would be a top 3 or 4 pick in almost any class, slides to 9. You know, there's big time red flags attached to him when that happens. The Eagles, however, I think are uniquely qualified to take on a guy like this because of the connection to Georgia, because he's going to have so many familiar teammates around him, on top of a bunch of key veteran, no-nonsense guys that he's going to be playing with and going to be in the locker room with. I think they're in a good position to kind of groom him and get his head on straight, so to speak. With that being said, it's still a big risk with the 9th overall pick. If it pays off, it's going to be awesome. And if he plays like the player that he's capable of playing like, he'll be a tremendous value even at 9. So that's just a huge swing player for me that's really tough to grade because the player is an A, but the off-the-field stuff is just so concerning. I don't know if he'll ever actually become the player that we think he can be. Nolan Smith at 30 is tremendous value. I mean, this is a guy that a lot of people leading up to the draft, myself included, thought he had legit top 10 potential. This is a guy that I never thought would get past the first 15 picks To get him at 30 is a home run. Really good player. Kelee Ringo, I thought that was really interesting what you said there about position change, because I think you're right. This is a guy that could be a perfect candidate to play that rover position, to maybe play more of a hybrid role, maybe just moving him full-time to safety, I think could be in the cards for him as well. But in the fourth round, it's great value. You're getting a great athlete who played a lot of good football. In the fourth round, it feels like a guy that I thought would have gone at least one round earlier. Speaking of one round earlier, Sidney Brown is a player. I'm a little higher on him than you are, it sounds like. I like Sidney Brown's tape. I think he's a really solid football player and a good pick in the middle of this draft. Tanner McKee out of Stanford. When you've got a guy with that size and those traits who played in a pro-style offense, it's just a great value pick. Even if he just becomes your backup quarterback, I just think it's great taking a flyer on a guy like that. Like I said, very few guys play in pro-style offenses nowadays. Stanford's one of the few programs that still runs one. He's got a lot of big game experience and a smart kid, a big kid, a good arm. He checks a lot of boxes for what you'd want to look for in an NFL quarterback. I agree with you. Doesn't fit what they do offensively, so it's a little weird from that standpoint, but I just think it's great value in the sixth round. I'd probably go A minus. I think the A is valid. The only reason I'm going to minus is because I think Jalen Carter has serious bust potential. But with that being said, if it ends up being a boom, this will be an A++ draft when it's all said and done. Let's wrap it up with the New York Giants here. In the first round, 24th overall pick, they take Deontay Banks, cornerback out of Maryland, 6 feet tall, 197 pounds, ran a 4.35 40-yard dash, and had a 42-inch vertical. Those are big-time combine numbers. Those are prototype numbers. Those are the kind of numbers you look for when you're looking for a big-time outside cornerback, ideal size, explosive athlete, great speed, really versatile corner. He played in a variety of coverages, a wide variety of coverages in college. He can stick to receivers in man coverage, but he can also play off the ball in zone. Fluid, smooth footwork. He's also a tough kid, a strong kid who plays through perimeter blocks, gets after guys, isn't afraid to make the tackle. He reroutes wide receivers with his size. This is a day one starter with big time skills. I love this pick for the Giants, and they desperately needed a corner, and I think they hit this one out of the park. Second round, 57th pick, they take John Michael Schmitz, the center out of Minnesota. Best center in this entire class. And for me, he was the number one center in this class. I don't really think it was that close. This guy is a stud. And it's a position that they also really needed to address. Highly consistent blocker, big time football intelligence. He made all the calls for the offensive line at Minnesota. A tenacious player, plays through the whistle, finishes blocks. His overall technique is just really solid. Plug and play starter day one in the second round. In the third round, they took Jalin Hyatt, the wide receiver out of Tennessee, with the 73rd pick here. Now, they traded up to get him at this pick. I'm not as high on Hyatt as some draft analysts, but it's really hard to argue that he wasn't a top 50 player in this class. Getting him at pick 73 feels like a steal here in the third round. Explosive player, accelerates, can really pick up that top end speed quickly. He can separate. He has that second gear that you look for and can just pull away in the open field. He's a crisp route runner. He had 15 receiving touchdowns last year. He's a home run hitter, and he's going to be joining an offense that desperately needed one. So I like that fit in New York. I also like running back Eric Gray from Oklahoma, Alex, who they took in the fifth round. This is a one cut back, hits the hole hard. He's decisive with the football. He's not going to hesitate. He finds where he wants to go and he hits it hard. And he's not a burner, you know, not a guy that's going to pull away from the defense, but just a really good ball carrier who's going to add depth to that running back room. Those first three picks, if we just stop after the first three picks, this is already an outstanding class for the New York Giants. I mean, finding big-time players at big-time positions of need for New York. I like a lot of their later picks as well. Hard not to be really impressed with what the G-men did here. A plus for me, Alex.
Yeah, I like what they did as well. I mean, getting Deontay Banks, even though I did point out he got kind of torched by the receiver that the Kansas City Chiefs drafted. But overall, I mean, a lot of speed, high-end player, I think very solid pick. Jalin Hyatt, wide receiver. I love Tillman, and I also loved Hyatt coming out of Tennessee. Both of Hendon Hooker's wide receivers there. The running back, Eric Gray, I'm interested to see how good it is. I like him, but he's one of these fifth-round guys that, you know what, I wouldn't be surprised, similar to what we saw from Damian Pierce last season, to see him pop up and flash as well. John Michael Schmitz, very underrated. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he was my number. Yes, he was my number one center. I just had to think about it really quick. He was my number one center, so now you have somebody on the center that's handing that ball off and calling out the right plays to help Daniel Jones on that line. And again, I agree with you. Those three picks, I think, are home run picks on paper, as we know right now. And I think Eric Gray can surprise in being in that backfield with Saquon as well. So I do like what they did. Very interesting to see how, if they're all going to be day one starters. I don't know if Jalin Hyatt is going to be a day one starter. That's the one person I'm not sure on, but he obviously is going to get a lot of snaps, but I'm just simply not sure if he's a day one starter, but I do believe in him.
I think in a wide receiver room that's really thin, he probably will be one. I think in a lot of other NFL wide receiver rooms, he probably wouldn't be. And like I said, I'm not quite as high on him as some people, but like I touched on there a minute ago, I think it was really good value where they got him. So I like the pick, and getting an explosive playmaker for Daniel Jones, I think, was a must this offseason. And that is going to do it, guys, for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. Before we go, I want to give a shout out to our friends at The Tailgate Foodie for sponsoring today's episode. Check them out at thetailgatefoodie.com. I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast. We'll be right back.